The number one thing for me, because I'm just still such a music fan, is I love connecting with other artists. I think it's really great to meet people that are out there on the road, in the grind, grassroots, doing this thing. And everyone seems very willing to share resources. There's nothing like it.
That's Jamie Harris talking about the Folk Alliance that's here in Kansas City this week. I'm Jamie Green, and this is Trading Fours. Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Green. I am refreshed from a wonderful winter hiatus, where I took off all of January and a little bit of December as well. Taking some time away from things, I think, is always healthy and allows you to kind of step back and reassess some things. So for me, it made me think, where do I want this podcast to go on in the future? And it boiled down to several things. First, I got rid of subscriptions. Yes, it was fun to make exclusive content for subscribers, but it was a lot of work for not much money, so it's gone. On top of that, I had potential guests ask me, hey, where's your Eric Johnson interview? As if maybe I was, you know, pulling a George Santos and I lied about it. But I'd have to be like, hey, sorry, I have a subscription service where the last 10 episodes are free, but the ones earlier are in a vault, so let me send you a direct link, blah, blah, blah. That was a pain in the ass and made me just decide to punt the whole thing. So, I'm just putting a tip jar down on the show notes. That's it. I'm going to handle it like I do when I play live shows. There's a tip jar. Like one of you here? Put in a shekel or two. In the virtual tip jar. Don't want to? Don't do it. I never started this podcast to make money anyway. I have a day job for that, thank God. And I play gigs for spending cash, so this is all good. Okay. I'm also going to focus on doing as many interviews as I possibly can in person. That's how this all started anyway. Does anybody remember the world pre-COVID? Vaguely, right? So I drove all the way over to Matt Hopper's house, who's a phenomenal jazz guitarist. It's episode one. Check it out if you haven't heard it. In October in 2019, and interviewed him in his house. And they were all done that way until, as we all know, the world shut down. The bright side of this, of course, is like I knew that every musician on the planet was sitting home, and so I started reaching out to people like Neil Giraldo and Adrian Ferrard and Jason Faulkner and a bunch of other cool cats, which also then led me to be noticed by PR people. Now people get pitched to me, so that's all good. But if I can do it in person, I'm going to do it in person. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't work that way, but when I can, I will. And I think you'll enjoy that. It is February. And one of the cool things that goes on in February is the Folk Alliance International Conference here in Kansas City. A lot of people in Kansas City don't even know this. They're like, what? But there's people from all over the country and world that come to the Kansas City in February. Super cool event. And so my first guest is here in Kansas City, Jamie Harris. She's fabulous. Got a brand new album out. Boomerang Town comes out February 17th. You're really going to dig it. She's got an amazing story. So we're just going to get started. Here is my conversation with Jamie Harris. Well, I appreciate you doing this. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate you asking me to be a part of it.
Well, absolutely. And I how many times you've been to Kansas City? Do you know?
That is a great question. This is my third time at Folk Alliance since it's been in Kansas City. And the first year I came was 2018. I was just here for a day last time. And then I went to the one in New Orleans. But I've been a couple times. We played Knuckleheads.
Okay.
And, but I, not a lot, but I have such great memories because I'm, you know, it's funny being with Folk Alliance because we come to Kansas City, but we're kind of just in this hotel. So I haven't really had a chance to explore the city quite yet.
Yeah.
It's almost although like we did go to a great barbecue place yesterday that my friend took me to. Why do I keep saying Sapiro's? That's wrong. But it was kind of on the outskirts of town.
Okay.
Yeah, that was cool. But mostly I'm just in the hotel.
I was going to say, that's so magnanimous of you as a Texan that you could admit that Kansas City has good barbecue, because usually my Texan family and friends are always like, Kansas City. And
the ribs were great. The ribs were great. The burnt ends, it was working for me.
Well, that's great. Well, I think it's cool. So I told people, you know, a lot of people don't even know this goes on in Kansas City. And it's a huge deal. Like, there's people from Scotland, Australia, all over, obviously here. I had some guy send me an email, which I appreciated, because he's making the effort that he was driving from Montreal to here. And I was like, man, you're serious, because that's a long way. So what do you get out of it? What do you enjoy about coming to Folk Alliance here?
And it's just, there's nothing like it. You know, there's industry here, of course. And I mean, my first Folk Alliance that I went to was in 2018. And I had one goal, because they sent out a list of all the people that are going to be attending. And I went through that spreadsheet and I saw David Macias, 30 Tigers. And I said, well, I'm going to play 26 times so that I give that guy a chance to come see me at least once, you know? So I did that, and it was crazy. And sure enough, the second to last show I played, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning or something insane like that in the Kerrville Folk Festival room. And there were two people in the room, and he was one of them. Wow. So it worked. And that's when I first met David, and I got my first booking agent as a result of Folk Alliance. And of course, I'm working with David now for this new record. So opportunities like that really do present themselves, but it's also just a great place to reconnect with our friends that are out on the road doing this. For us to all be together and hear what everyone's up to and just connect is really special.
Well, that's great. You know, it's interesting. I tell people not to come to Kansas City in the dead of winter, because it's not great weather-wise, but I think it makes sense for you guys, because you tour so much of the year that probably February is probably one of your slower months usually, correct?
Yeah, that's true. We try at least not to be in the middle of the ice. If you have the advantage to do that, of course, the reality is, you know, like, I tour with my partner, Mary Gaucher, often, and we just figured out, January, why don't we go to Florida? You know, but I think that definitely goes to see more senior artists, right? If you're just kind of starting out or at the beginning of your journey, you're probably going to get the icier gigs and the icier times of the year. I was fortunate. I had a friend helping drive me, because I'm from Texas and don't know how to drive in ice. And I was thinking, oh, Oklahoma, Missouri, Arkansas, that's the South.
No.
It's ice in February. I was so wrong. I continue to learn.
No, this is great. So yeah, you gave us a great segue here, because as you were talking about, so 30 Tigers is, when I looked at your playlist, this is who the play. This new album is amazing. It's a great album, Jamie. I really dug it.
Thank you so much.
I listened to it, I don't know, 7-8 times. And I just, you know, it's interesting. One of the best parts of doing this podcast is being exposed to music that you probably wouldn't have listened to on your own. And discovering things, and you kind of lay it all out there, though. This is a very, I don't want to know if you want to say personal, but you certainly are, you're talking about some pretty heavy stuff in here.
Well, it's been a heavy time. You know, it's been a heavy time, certainly with, you know, with the pandemic, but a lot of these songs dropped in 2015, 2016, some of them before I even had the life experience to finish them. There were songs that were really nagging at me during a time when, you know, talk about being in Austin. I mean, I lost my mentor, Jimmy LaFave, to cancer in 2017, but he got sick in 2016. We had a good friend of ours named Chris Porter, who was killed tragically on the road in a car accident. It was just a lot of grief, and people I knew that were losing their spouses, and something about the pandemic and the global cloud of grief allowed me to revisit a lot of those songs. And it also occurred to me that we weren't just grieving lives lost, but we're also grieving, in some cases, the loss of a dream, the loss of identity, particularly some of us that are so used to being on the go and then got grounded and having to readjust to that. I think it really, I can't remember a time that I've slowed down that much since I left my parents' house when I was 18 years old. So a lot of that stuff really bubbled up for me.
I think if all the things that musicians could expect, whether it's not getting paid enough or getting screwed or having to play to only three people, like all these things, nobody ever thought the whole world's just going to shut down. You're going to have nothing to do for over a year. And we're still not completely back to normal, but it's really, you know, I look at my kids and how much it's affected them. And I think a lot of these reverberations of this time, they'll be, you know, we'll be hearing about it and feeling it 10, 15, 20 years from now.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. And I think it's one of the things that I can do to participate in the world is to try to capture the time that we're living in. And the only way I can do that is through, or the best way I can do that, I guess, I feel like, is through song. That's where I know how to search for answers. That's where I know how to articulate things that are difficult for me to articulate with my speaking words. And it's been my experience that if I just follow that, those inspirations, that whatever's supposed to come does. And so, yeah, I mean, it's, some people say, well, it's a pretty heavy record. Or I even had somebody say, well, I don't, when I was looking at working with different producers, you know, I don't want to make a record this heavy after what we've been through. I'm like, well, I think some of us are still going through it. I don't think there's no timeline on grief. There's no, just because we've, you know, shifted a little bit politically in one particular office, that doesn't mean that people aren't still dealing with stuff in their hometowns. And yeah, it's like all I know how to do is to honor the songs that came forth.
Yeah. So when you talk to Johnny, one of the things that I found interesting, I say that COVID was a Rorschach test, right? Like everybody got, you know, some people are just like, nope, just put their head down. And like, I had studio musician friends. It's like, my life really hasn't changed that much. I'm in the studio 15 hours a day. And I had other people's like, holy shit, my whole life has just gone away and I don't know how I'm going to deal with it. And I think that it's interesting with you when you talk to Johnny about how like you got really in shape. Because most people are like baking sourdough and like putting on weight and stuff like that. But I guess it's what you make of, you know, the crisis, for lack of a better term. So was it because you had the time to finally really exercise, or did you find it just cathartic to exercise in this time?
I think it was both, but for me, it's something that I've always wanted to do, but have never prioritized the time to do. And one thing that I've realized is that, like, there's a guy that I love. It's a folk singer. He goes by Don Kahn. And I met him at the Woody Guthrie Folk Festival last year. The dude is one of the most fit person I've ever seen in my life. And I've been in the room with professional athletes. He's just ripped. And he looks awesome on stage. And I said, well, how do you do this? And he said, well, I've always brought my own food on the road, even before other people did. And he said, but whatever they taught us to do in high school, I just never stopped doing that. He's like, I've just worked out ever since high school. Well, when I was, you know, in school, they had us do like stuff that I hated, like running. I never found the thing that I loved. And in the pandemic, it opened up all these personal trainers that were doing workouts online. I found one that I love. A comedian named Stasia Patel has this thing called School of Thought. And it's something I've been able to stick with. And for sure, now it's a habit. I've never had enough time to develop a habit around it because I've always been in so much motion. And now I work out on the road. I never would have imagined in a million years, like we're at the Edmonton Folk Festival and I'm going to wake up at 9 a.m. to work out on the road. And it's been so fun because I figured out there's a whole other group of musicians. See, I'm more of the night tribe, right? So I'll hang out till the sun comes up around here and play music with the night folks. I never experienced the people that wake up at 9 a.m. and go to the gym. You know, it's a whole nother way to meet musicians on the road. It's been super fun. I met a lot of like Ani DeFranco's band and in the gym. So it's been really fun to keep that up. But yeah, I think there's something to be really said about just having enough time to develop a habit with anything, whether it's practicing, getting, you know, a workout routine going, writing practice, which I slack on quite a bit. But yeah, the pandemic really afforded me that. And I'm really grateful.
Well, that's great. And the other thing I thought, so Jamie, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, you've been through a lot. Like I know I read your bio and it said you turned 30 during the pandemic. And just from reading stuff and looking at some other and listening to the interview, thanks, Johnny. Thanks for doing my work for me. A traumatic brain injury.
Yeah.
Like you said, you lost your friend Jimmy and some other people. Like you've had that. Part. Yeah. The one thing that really I was raised Catholic, my wife was raised Catholic and stuff. And so it's one of those things where we left the church because between the all the anti-gay things and how they became so right-wing and so involved in politics, and then all the pedophilia and stuff. And we're like, we're just out and stuff. But what kind of resonated with me when you were talking about that was you missed the community aspect of it, right? You missed that. You know, you talked about this huge hole in your life of all these hours that you were involved with your church. That's got to be hard. It was hard for us.
Yeah, I think, you know, music, I'm really grateful because it gave me a different community. And as I've gone further in my life, I mean, being in recovery, there's a huge piece of it that is space-based. And I'm around a lot of songwriters that also treat the responsibility of being a songwriter as service. You know, I'm not around a lot of people that are, oh, my dream is to be super famous and play stadiums and it's all about me and this is run on my talent and my self-will. I'm around people that really believe that, oh, okay, there's a responsibility to honor what the song is saying or what it wants to say to come through. And that way I can use that to be of service to other people that might need to hear what this song has to say. So I've found other places to plug in those values that are still very important to me. But the church gave me a framework to do that. And when that disappears, also, I didn't realize until I got further away from it that there's a particular way of speaking, certain words that are in your vocabulary that you use quite often, even kind of the rhythm in which you talk. And I've realized it's come up for me recently, being in a situation where I was in a group of people that were using that rhythm of talking, and I realized my chest started to feel like it was closing up and my throat felt like I was closing up. And I said, oh my gosh, like this is really strange if you're not in the center of it. Because I felt like a guilt around it almost. Like I thought that I was including other people, that I was helping other people feel loved. And being on the other side of that, being so away from it and hearing that rhythm of speech, I was like, oh, it's like a different language that no one can even understand. Mm. It feels like it's doing the opposite. And I felt like guilty almost for participating in that, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
But I did miss the framework it gave me to do things like volunteer at the food bank and other things that I figured out, oh, I can do that on my own, but it's easier to do it in a group for sure.
Sure. And there's that feeling of community. And there's also that familiarity that if you grow up in that it's comforting in a lot of ways that you're just so used to it.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. I mean, my grandmother was, I realize now kind of how much of a badass she was. She was one of the first female deacons at the First Baptist Church of Waco. You know, so she was involved, but she wasn't necessarily like following in line. You know what I mean? She was moving and shaking to make things happen. And yeah, that was my community. And I do so deeply associate it with my musical beginnings. I learned how to sing in the church. I learned how to be on stage in some ways, playing in the musicals when I was a kid. And learning how to put a set list together for sure. You know, you want to take someone through an experience that brings them to a particular peak of emotional intensity. I learned how to do that in the church.
Yeah.
No doubt.
You're probably 137 episodes into this podcast. I would say over half told me that they got their start musically in the church.
Wow. And that's incredible.
Yeah. And John, you know, obviously there's, you know, here in Kansas City, we have a really big African-American community that is way in the church. And so you have all that. And then they went from that into either soul or jazz. I'm talking people, I'm trying to think some other people, there have been people that are not even from this country. It's like, you know, as a Roman Catholic, I'm very jealous, you know, I'm not a former Roman Catholic, I should say, because our music was terrible. It was always just the priest who couldn't sing in tune, you know, and a bad organ.
Oh, awesome. So, yeah.
So to get these other churches is like, wow, I'm really jealous. Like you guys got to have a lot more fun than I did.
Yeah. Like the Al Green thing. I also learned like the Blade brothers, Brady Blade and his brother.
Yeah.
Who, you know, played on one of my favorite records of all time, a Wrecking Ball, that they learned playing in the church with their dad.
Yeah. Aretha Franklin's dad was a deacon.
Of course.
Yeah. It's crazy. So I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska, Jamie, which is a college town, and a lot of people get things wrong about it. So if you ask people about Lincoln, if they think of anything, they're probably going to say, well, you used to have a football team and you don't anymore and stuff. And I'm wondering from the outside. Now, my mom was born in Teague, Texas, which is not too far from Waco. And as you know, my family, I have a lot of family in Austin stuff, but I think a lot of people, they don't know a whole lot about Waco except for Baylor and Branch Davidians. And that's about it. So give people some insight. What's Waco like besides just that?
Yeah, well, now it's changed. The Waco is a situation where there's a decorating show, Chip and Joanna Gaines. And
my wife loves that show.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you know what? It's funny. Like I got to give him credit. I had this whole thing, like you grew up in a town, you're like, oh, this place will never change. I want this to change. And then someone comes in and changes it. And you're like, they changed it. You know, but Mary and I were visiting my family for Christmas recently. And, you know, there's all this talk about them, like, oh, they go to this very conservative church or they believe this, believe that. And I think one of the things that's so cool about being a folk singer, being a troubadour is, you know, a lot of times people tell musicians to shut up and sing. We are in a different town every night. We are seeing the country. We're seeing the world. You know, it's like, I think there's something really valuable about going to see what's actually happening for yourself. So we were staying right near the Silos, which that blows my mind because the First Baptist Church of Waco is right by the Silos. So as a kid, for some reason, I was always mesmerized by those things. Like, man, like, I feel like they should do something with that. Or it was like such a symbol of my childhood to me. And maybe that's why I was a little like, oh, they changed it. But turns out, what they're doing is really facilitating a lot of community in Waco. I've never seen in all my travels a more diverse workforce, all different, you know, gender identities, colors. They have a place where families can gather. They have a juice truck there, and all of the employees are women who have been recently released from the criminal justice system and are all in recovery. I was like, this is awesome what they're doing here. But the Waco that I grew up in, what I remember about it, my experience of it was, you talk about it being a college town. Well, there's a difference in you know, being in Austin. When the students are in town, like even in Nashville, when the Vanderbilt kids come back or the Belmont kids, we feel the difference. The traffic is different. The restaurants are full. You feel the energy of it. The Baylor kids, at least at that time when I was growing up, they really stayed in their own bubble. So it doesn't really impact the town how you think it would. And to me, it's difficult to explain because it's not a small town that's small enough to have small town charm, where like everybody knows each other and you have to exist in that kind of lifestyle, but it's not big enough to be a city. To me, it felt like living in a shopping mall. Like one of the best ways I can figure out to describe what it's like to live in Waco is, one, the chain restaurant Cheddar's moved in. We named a street after it because it was super exciting to have not just a Chili's, but to also have the option of going to Cheddar's. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I was like looking for like, where are the local businesses? Where is the local pride? And I do think there is something, and I could be wrong about this, but I think there is something about the Baptist culture because it is, in my experience, pretty anti-drinking. You know, even the Catholics, what, you got your wine in the church, or the Lutherans.
Oh,
you know.
Catholics are all about drinking, Jamie.
All about drinking, yeah. So, you know, there's something about that I think, you know, if people were going to drink, they were going to do it in private. They weren't going to go out of their houses. So it does have a little bit of effect of the public spaces in town. But one of the cool things about growing up in Waco, one is that it was just small enough that I did have to have an imagination in order to survive there. And I loved it. There used to be this place called Beatniks, and it was kind of the only place where if you were a little bit left of center, you hung out there. There was a great professor at the university, this wonderful Black woman that did slam poetry. There was a guy named Jordan Rudy who was involved in a gypsy punk band called Johnny's Body that was fun. The tattoo artist in town. Me, I was into folk singing. I also got to join a Pink Floyd tribute band down there. So that was really fun because I wasn't just, you know, hanging out with folk singers or hanging out with whatever crew I was in. Everyone that was creative really hung out in one spot. And that was really, really fun to be around all sorts of people and to be in the mix of that energy of being that way in a town where you're trying to find your way.
Yeah.
That's funny you said about the drinking privately. So my mom, who's still with us, thankfully, and she's 90 years young, and she would refer to them as bathtub Baptists.
Oh, meaning, that's incredible. That's meaning great.
The drinking was in the bathtub. Yeah. So perfect. I love this album. So did you, I assume you recorded it in Nashville?
I didn't. I made it with Mark Hallman in Austin, Texas. And Mark had a studio for many years called the Congress House.
And it's no longer there. He got rid of it, correct?
It's no longer there. It started in a van and then ended up taking over more of the house. There are all these musicians that ended up living in the house, and then more and more it became a studio. He's made a lot of records for some of my heroes, like Eliza Gilkison. What's interesting now is I think right after my record, he made a record for Rain Perry and then a record for Tom Russell, and that was it.
Yeah, Rain was on the podcast. She's great. Oh,
love Rain. Rain. And so he, you know, it was really cool because it was kind of the perfect record to make in the time of the pandemic that we were in, because Mark is such a great multi-instrumentalist. And I really said, look, you really produce this. Like, I just want to follow where you lead. And he did it so beautifully. And so he played most of the instruments on the record. Andre Moran, who's an engineer, played guitar on the record. We had a couple friends fly in some things. Like, my friend Dirk Powell plays accordion on it. I had some harmony singer friends. And David Mansfield, who was the violin player on the Rolling Thunder Review tour with Bob Dylan, flew in some violin and viola. Oh,
the violin stuff
was
beautiful.
So that was cool. Oh, yeah. And Michele Gazzic from Italy played. I mean, but mostly it was just me and Mark and Andre, which was really a beautiful, intimate way to make that record. And now, so when my mentor, Jimmy LaFave, was alive, he helped run a studio called Cedar Creek, which is a similar thing. It's in South Austin. It started as a house and became a studio. And it had been kind of sitting dormant after Jimmy passed. And now Mark and Andre are working there at Cedar Creek. So the Congress House is like, so it seems like a beautiful thing. And now Andre is the producer and Mark is engineering.
So in a way, so it feels like
it's just such a beautiful, it lives on. Yeah, it lives on. And I love that there's a little bit of connection to Jimmy as well. That's really beautiful.
Did you have any inklings or wanting to do a home studio? I mean, so many musicians are like, well, screw it, I guess I'm building a home studio. Did you want to do that at all during the pandemic or no?
Oh yeah, I had a blast doing that. I mean, here it was my experience. We were in Seattle when everything got wiped off the calendar. I was on a plane and I get a call from this friend of mine named Bob Hillman, who is an awesome artist out of San Francisco. I met him through Peter Case. And he goes, hey, I've been wanting to do this project for a long time with this friend of mine who's a guitar player. I'd love for you to sing on it. Do you have a little home recording setup? You know how to do it? And I said, sure, because I've learned in the business, one of the best things you can do is just say you know how to do something and learn how to do it, right?
Yep.
So, and I did, like, my dad did home recording, so I had some experience, and I've been in studios long enough to know certain things. And so I got a little setup and started working on it. And he said, we're going to have a Zoom meeting with, the other guy on the project, Jerry Leonard. I was like, oh, okay, cool. So we hop on Zoom and I'm like, this guy looks super familiar. Who is this guy? Goes by Spooky Ghost. He was David Bowie's guitar player
for the last 10 years.
I was like, oh my God. Okay. I really got to learn. I mean, of course I always want to do my best. I was like, I got to learn how to do this at a super high level. So I hopped on my friend, Chris Masterson, who's a great guitar player, producer, multi-instrumentalist. He helped me on Zoom. Like, here's how you do this when this goes wrong. And here's how you comp vocals. So I got dropped in the grease pretty quick. And I did a lot of home recording during the pandemic. It was really, really fun. And I thought, man, like, I love doing this. This is a blast. Like, I'm having a great time making demos, experimenting. And then the first time that I went into a real studio where there was an engineer, I went, nope, they're way better at this. It's really nice to just focus. Have someone say, you already got it. You don't need to redo it a million times. So I think I'm, even though it was a blast to experiment with, I think I'm just going to stick to letting the pros handle it.
Yeah. No, it's a lot, man. It's a lot of it, tapping your head and your stomach at the same time. I mean, just trying to hit the record button and then get back your hands back on the guitar, like, right? It's like, there's a lot going on. No, I'm always, for sure. I'm always amazed when people can do it all themselves. You know, like McCartney, just like, no, I'm going to do an album. I'm going to do it alone. I mean, I know it was his first album. He did that too. And I had the Whitmore sisters on and I talked to them about when they did their album together, which, it's and with the husband and
who's Chris. Yeah.
Chris. It's Chris is exactly. But I could see that it's a lot of work, man. Right.
Yeah. I think especially being by yourself and mm-hmm. just going like, oh, like I nailed that. Or thinking, oh, I didn't get it when I did, and pushing myself where I'm going past the thing that's great.
Yeah.
I can wear myself out with that. I need an outside person.
I think most people do. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I think there's a point that you can't be objective when it's yourself in some ways. I mean, a lot of ways we're our own worst critics too. Like, I'm sure you've had people like, you're like, nah, I didn't think that was that great. And somebody's like, are you kidding? That was amazing. You get that kind of feedback too. Yeah. It's not just negative.
Right.
So this album comes out on the 17th, which is just 2 weeks away. You're touring a bunch, right? Tell me about your 2023.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I'm going to be in California, like right after the record comes out. I'm going to be going to Texas to do a release show. Going to be in Nashville doing a release show. And going to be doing a tour with Mary Gaucher and Tim O'Brien and Jan Fabricius, which will be really fun to team up with, you know, legendary Tim O'Brien. And we've got some festivals planned for the summer. I think we're scheming on a return to Europe, but I'm excited just to see, yeah, where this record takes me and how far these songs go and who wants to hear them live. I'm very excited to see what happens.
That's great. Do you have a favorite place in Europe? Where's your like happiest place in Europe?
We love Utrecht, right outside of Amsterdam.
Okay.
It's super easy to get into Amsterdam, but it's a beautiful city. We can just walk and walk and walk everywhere. And we love the coffee shop culture, just sit out drinking coffee or mint tea. They do this thing. I don't know why it's only in the Netherlands, but they just take fresh mint leaves and kind of mull them up a little bit with hot water. And it is so satisfying. And they have them everywhere. And some of the best thrift shopping. I always score great in Utrecht. That's one of my favorite places to land.
So when you thrift shop, what are you looking for?
Anything red. I've got the red thing going on. I've chilled out with shoes. I kind of, because we're on the road so much.
You're like Sammy Hagar, just a woman and 50 years younger.
Real. I mean, because we're on the road, I'm always looking for, okay, if I can find something that looks cool as hell, you know, it has to be 1 + 1 = 3 because it's going to go in my suitcase. So it has to be able to do multiple things while I'm traveling and hopefully doesn't wrinkle and can wash easily. That's what I'm looking for. Always. Absolutely. Thrifting or not. Yeah.
That's so funny. And that actually, you know, I do a theme question every year. So last year was what's a album I should have in my vinyl collection that I probably don't. And I totally should have. And I got like amazing like things. And of course, probably to my wife's chagrin, I went out and bought a lot of them. Like I took the advice. But this year I was like, you know, since the world, you know, where's wood, I'll knock on it. The world's opening up. Musicians travel a ton. So Jamie, what's your travel hack? What makes traveling easier for you? Like what's one of the things after being on the road so much and going so many places, what have you found? What's a helpful thing that people should figure out to do too, to make traveling a little less awful?
Well, I'm a coffee drinker and I am very hardcore about drinking coffee. And I think you can spend so much time on the road trying to find a good coffee spot if you don't know it. So I know this is an audio format, but one of the best things we've discovered, it's called a Kalita. So okay. It's a little pour over, but it's very small. It doesn't take up a lot of room, like even a AeroPress does, or one of those big pour overs. It's metal, so it doesn't get broken. And we just grind our own coffee. Or sometimes if we run out, we go to a coffee shop and just say, hey, can you grind this for a pour over? And this little travel kettle is the best, like, this is a $20 setup here. And everywhere we go, I have the best coffee. I like to get my coffee from a place called Third Coast in Austin. And it helps you make friends too, for like particularly at an event like this, when someone goes, hey, oh man, I'm really tired. I need a cup of coffee. I'm like, oh, I can do that. I can make you a really good coffee. And that gives me a lot of satisfaction. That's a big deal for me. Oh, yeah there you go.
Yeah. I am a coffee fanatic. There's nothing worse. Then in a town that you don't know and you can't find any good coffee, or you try to walk, like you get on Yelp and you try to walk 5 blocks and it went out of business last year. And you're like, what am I supposed to do now?
Yeah. I will say too, another, I was just traveling with a guy. This is pretty cool. He was showing me this thing you can do where you get 30 cent ramen, but then you go to the grocery store. And that's another thing. I think people just don't think, go to the grocery store. We have this idea, oh, we're traveling. And I mean, Mary and I, we don't drink and we are obsessed with food. So part of the joy of being on the road for us is finding good places to eat. We enjoy that. But there's also something to be said about just going to the grocery store and having some stuff that sets you up so that you don't get hangry. And yeah, my friend Kevin, I was traveling with, he just took 30 cent ramen, but then went to the grocery store, just got a little cilantro, a pre-cut chicken that you can buy for like $5 in the rotisserie, and chicken stock, a little bit of garlic, a little bit of like pre-cut onions. And we made like a chicken ramen that tasted out of this world. And it cost us probably $4 to make in total.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Do you know the super healthy vegan ultra marathoner Rich Roll? I don't know if you've ever.
I don't know.
So he has a great podcast because it's all, you know, he was an alcoholic to the point where he went to jail like for over 30, like he was at a terrible car wreck and like, you know, thought he was this high power lawyer and had, and it, you know, his life with a lot of people, same with my father when he went through rehab, your life falls apart for a lot of people. You have to hit that bottom. But anyway, that's the sad part. The good thing is he has taken all these life lessons and now he's like ultra healthy and stuff. And one of the things, so people are always like, what do you eat on the road? Cause you know, he won't do processed food. And he goes, well, in a pinch, I just get rice and black beans and guacamole from Chipotle. And I was like, in a million years, I would have never thought that guy would have said, yeah, go to Chipotle to get stuff. But I always go to Whole Foods if there's a Whole Foods in town, because you can just go through the bar and pick out what you want.
Oh, that's great. I love that. That's great. That's super great. Another thing that I learned to do from vegans is, because I don't do a lot of dairy as a singer, but if you... You know, I travel with a little bit of my own cereal, and you can go down in the morning if you're staying in a hotel room and just, instead of, they don't have almond milk, because most of them don't. I think Hyatt's have almond milk and that's it. Orange juice. And it is delicious using orange juice instead of milk with cereal. Oh my gosh. Now I do it just all the time. I always put orange juice in my cereal, period. Yeah, it's a great road hack.
Do you have any questions? You want any tips for me about Kansas City before we go? I'm happy.
Absolutely.
My wife's a native. I have been here since 94. So quasi native at this point. It's been almost 30 years. So what do you want to hear about?
I'm like an Atlas Obscura person, right? So every time I'm on the road, if we haven't even just a little bit of time, I like to find the most offbeat, weird thing. You kind of got to be a local to know about. I also like creepy stuff. If there's anything, but so yeah, what is your, like, it's kind of off the beaten path, but must see Kansas City thing.
Okay. The good news is this is on the streetcar. So you can leave your hotel, get on the streetcar, which is free, which is really cool. Go down to the River Market. There is the Steamboat Arabia Museum, which a steamboat was coming up the Missouri River in 1850s. Blew up, like sank. Fortunately, nobody, the only fatality was a donkey, which they'll talk about in the museum, but it sinks. They, you know, they forget about it. They can't find it. It gets discovered in the 1980s because the river had moved, and it's actually now in the middle of a farmer's field. A family, like not a corporation, not people who like have done this, just some farmer family decides they're going to like dig this up and be able to do it. So they own the museum now. It is a time capsule of the 1850s. So if you want to see, because it's all brand new stuff that sunk and sank. So that's pretty different. You're not going to find that.
My gosh.
And you can take the streetcar. You don't even have to take an Uber. So that's just right up the road. Now, if you want a little...
we're going to do that.
A little macabre out your window. Also, Union Station. That's where the Union Station massacre happened, where Pretty Boy Floyd was being released. It was a huge shootout with Tommy guns. You can actually go see the bullet holes are still there in Union Station. You can see that. That's still happening. So that's still there. So that's, you know, Kansas City was a gangster's paradise in the 1930s and 40s. So crazy.
My jaw. I can't get my jaw off the ground. Obviously, as a Woody Guthrie freak, kind of like I need to go see that as well.
Yeah, they actually... They do a tour, the gangster tour stuff, but you can find most of it on your own. You know, a lot of times they say, oh, it was such, and you're like, oh, wasn't that this town? If you can think it was happening. It was a wild, Wes, crazy, everything, any like debauchery that you can think of, it was happening in the 1930s and when Tom Pendergast ran the town. So,
wow. Thank you. Those are two fantastic recommendations. We're going to do that.
You should. And it's right there. And then the World War I Museum is right there as well. So there you go. You got good stuff. Well, this has been a joy. I hope I get to see you in person on Saturday. I'm going to stop by Laura's showcase. I think you're going to be there at some point, right?
Yeah. With super fun with Graham Weber and Ben Queller. Assuming they can both get out of Austin. I don't know what the situation is there.
It sucks in Austin right now.
Yeah, Colin Gilmore and Tammy, or a lot of people are trapped there. But I think it's amazing that Ben Queller is going to be at Folk Alliance.
That's great.
I was there the ACL year when he had the epic nosebleed. I don't know if you remember that. It was he like got a mainstay. It was awesome because he was I was there with my little brother too, and he was like a kind of similar, like kind of reddish hair, like super skinny, super white dude, you know, and plays guitar. My little brother's a rocker. And I think it was like one of the first times that Ben finally got to play ACL. It was like a big deal. And he got just a straight up hilarious nosebleed. Bled all over his white guitar. It was like iconic. And somebody threw a tampon from the audience and he put it in his nose. And the next year they invited him back and he made t-shirts, which I still have. I still have my Ben Queller tampon in his t-shirt. It was wonderful.
Keeping Austin weird.
Keeping Austin weird. That's exactly right.
Well, love the album. Is it coming out in vinyl? Are you doing vinyl or just CD? What's the different formats?
Oh, we're doing vinyl and I'm extremely excited. I have some in my bag here. It's just like making me so happy to show people. We have a limited edition vinyl that you can get on my website right now that's red. But we also have the vinyl is going to be in a bunch of different independent record stores. And if it's not at your record store, I'm very easy to find on the internet. Please just message me and I would love to make sure that it ends up in your record store because I love independent record stores. I'm like honored to have a vinyl. But it's very cool. I had these girls, Shauna and Sarah Dodds, who are multiple Grammy Award winners for packaging, do the packaging for the vinyl. And it comes with a thing that I don't think I've ever seen. The technical term is an O card. So the outer sleeve that you put the entire vinyl in, not just the unit itself, but you know, the whole packaging is printed with an image of me in the water. And part of it is opaque and part of it's translucent. So it looks like I'm popping off of the water. Wow. And or popping off the page, it's cool. And then you take it off and it's a whole different experience with the vinyl itself. So the sleeve is collectible too. I'm so excited for people to see it and to have it.
I want one.
Well, make sure you get one.
No, I will get one. If you have one here, I'll buy it. I never ask for freebies. I always pay musicians. I think it's lame to ask for freebies.
Cool.
I will buy one from you.
I have four left. I'll save one for you. We're just in the... And this is so wild. We were in the cafe downstairs. There's a girl named Katrine Noel. She's in a band called Les Hay Babies. We're playing here tonight. They're a great French-speaking, kick-ass girl trio from Canada. And I wrote The Fair and Dark-Haired Lad with her at a co-writing retreat. I got paired with her and Dirk Powell, and I haven't seen her since we wrote that song together. And she was the one that came up with the idea of, there's a line in there that says, you know, had my first drink before I could drive. And I said, Daddy left it on the counter half full one night. And she said, what if it was Mama? And we were like, that's way cooler. And so it was really cool to see her. And I'm excited to give her a copy of the record so that she has it.
That's great.
She's a part of that song. Yeah.
Well, it's nice to meet you. It's a beautiful album. I highly suggest anybody listening to it. I always put in the show notes. I always say if you're lazy bastards, you can't find your own, just scroll down as you're listening to this podcast episode and you click on it and it'll be there. So I will put all of it in the show notes. And Jamie, I hopefully will be healthy by Saturday and I will see you Saturday in person.
Thank you. Yeah, I get to feeling better. Thanks for still doing this. Even
absolutely. Remotely. I wouldn't miss it. All right. Have a good afternoon. Cool. Talk to you later.
Thanks. Bye-bye. You too. Was a good swim. I've been running around with someone.
Never thought I'd be this fun again. Jamie Harris, everybody. Yes, the album is great. Check it out. It comes out February 17th. A couple of the tracks are already out. This is one of the tracks that is already out. And it's fabulous. You know, there is a saying in life, I'm agnostic, but it's apropos, that
if you want to make God laugh, tell him or her your plans. And as you heard in the intro, my plan was to do as many of these in person, and then I managed to get some weird viral thing. Thankfully not COVID, but it felt horrible. I don't feel too hot today still. So we had to do that on Zoom. So I'm not saying I'm doing them all in person anymore, because that just bit me in the ass. Down in the show notes, how to follow Jamie. She is very active on social media. Buy her album. Once again, that's how musicians make money. That's going to do it for this time. I hadn't really thought about this, but this is becoming Folk February, because my next episode is with a Scottish group, a trio, Talisk. I'm talking to those gents this afternoon. And as you know, I love Scotland, so this should be fun. That is 1 week from today. Until then, go out, support live music. We will talk real soon. Bye-bye. Well, work's piled up, dishes ain't done. I've been stuck on the telephone. Ain't been sleeping in my bed. I'd rather be yours instead. And we tried counting down the days, but our hearts couldn't take the pain. Ain't never been so hard living this way. When I finally get to getting to you, babe, I'm gonna stay.